Let's get down to business.
Business.
My business.
Taking care of business.
No funny business, no conversation.
And now, back to America's business coach, Coach Ron Tunick.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank. I'm not Coach Ron Tunick. I'm sitting in for Coach Ron Tunick, who is over in Las Vegas speaking to a crowd of hundreds, if not thousands, of paying customers. They all want to learn what he knows, the secrets to selling, the secrets to coaching, and he is sharing that with him both today and tomorrow. I'm sitting in, filling in both days for him while he's here. Coach will be back on Thursday. For those of you that are big Coach fans, you'll be able to hear him on the Thursday show. He will be back from Las Vegas by then. We've got a fantastic second hour coming up. Some of my favorite guests are going to be coming along. We'll be talking technology and the age of the platform with Phil Simon, followed by one of the great thinkers of our time, Woody Brock, who is going to be talking about American gridlock and some of the challenges that we face in our political system. And then at the tail end of the hour, we'll be talking to Stan Weisleder, who is an expert on the Tuskegee Airmen. For those of you who follow entertainment, you know the movie Red Tails is out. It is a movie about the Tuskegee Airmen. And we're going to talk not only about the movie, but we're also going to talk a little bit about the airmen themselves and where there might be some differences between the movie and reality. All of that coming up in our next hour. My first guest this hour is Phil Simon. He's a recognized technology expert. He consults companies on how to optimize their use of technology. He's written four different books. His latest book is The Age of the Platform that came out late last year. His contributions have been featured on NBC, CNBC, and the Huffington Post, the Globe and Mail, and the American Express Open Forum, Fast Company, Technorati, and the list goes on and on and on. While not consulting, Phil speaks about emerging trends and technology. He also writes for a number of technology-oriented media outlets. He holds degrees from Carnegie Mellon University and also Cornell University. Joining us, hi, how are you today, Phil?
Bill, thank you for having me.
Oh, what a pleasure to have you on board. I love to have thought leaders like yourself on the show. So, but let's talk about your new book, The Age of the Platform, How Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google Have Redefined Business. And let's start with a basic understanding of terminology that you use. Define for us, what is a platform, and differentiate a platform from a plank in a platform and also from an ecosystem.
Okay. Well, I thought it was really important, Bill, to define those terms early on because, to me, platform has become a bit of a buzzword. And a platform, to me, quite simply, is an integrated set of planks, which, of course, begs the question, what's a plank? A plank is a single offering. It's a product or a feature. So if you take a look at, say, Apple, back when the company was founded, oh, gosh, 3 decades ago, it really initially wasn't a platform company. It became a platform company because, aside from computers, it got into music with iTunes, and then it started creating different hardware with the iPod and the iPad and the iPhone. And then it started streaming movies, and it launched iCloud, and now we're going to see Apple TV later this year.
Ooh, you have some insight on that for us?
I wish.
Breaking news here on The Business of Life. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take you out
connected.
Of it.
But so if you take a look at all of a planks put together, then that becomes the company's platform. So again, Google in 1998, when it was founded, was just a search engine. It wasn't a platform. It added YouTube and Google Docs and Maps and Gmail and all of these things, all of the planks, so it became a platform. Now, with regard to ecosystems, the most powerful platforms today, those of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, benefit from these vibrant ecosystems. So just as an example, I have an app in the App Store to promote my last book, The New Small. But there are 500,000 different apps. So you have all these people who are out there promoting their own business, right? But then by doing that, Apple takes a 30% cut. So if you're selling an app for, say, a dollar, Apple's going to make 30 cents, but that's happening millions and millions of times. So in a way, these companies have their partners and their customers and their users doing some of the marketing for them. And that's why these companies have really, in my opinion, I discuss this in the book, separated themselves from the pack.
My guest is Phil Simon. And Phil, it's a fascinating read because you identify what you call the Gang of Four, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, as the dominant platforms in business today. I think very few people would argue with that. Apple's share price today passed the $500 mark. It is, depending on what day you look at it, either the number one or number two company in the world in terms of market capitalization. That's amazing when you consider only in 1996, the share price for Apple was $4 a share. So from $4 a share in 96 to where it is today at 500, a phenomenal success story. How did the gang of four, Apple, Amazon, Google, Facebook, how did they make this quantum leap from their position about a decade ago to where they are today? I mean, what areas does the gang of four really dominate in?
Oh, gosh. I mean, they each have their own different emphases, and certainly Facebook is dominant in the social networking world, whereas a company like Apple and Amazon really don't do much with social technologies. Now, that's not to say that they haven't tried to embrace social planks. If you go to any Amazon page, you can like a product. You can retweet if you did a review, say, of my book, or you can actually engage in different conversations. So let's say someone goes up there and puts a bad review of the age of the platform, well, other people can chime in. So I would argue that is inherently a social activity, even though no one would confuse Amazon for Facebook. Same thing with Apple. When you go into iTunes, you can like an artist and you can ping a song, and then you can find other people who like that song and, in theory, connect with them at a concert. So there are social aspects to their individual platforms, but no one would mistake those companies for Facebook. They each have different areas of expertise, Bill, but they do often collide, and we're seeing that, for example, with movies. I can buy a Kindle Fire and stream movies, or I can watch movies on an iPad that I buy from iTunes, or YouTube now is making movies available online. You can also watch videos to your heart's content on Facebook, and I'd be shocked if we don't see more video integration on Facebook in 2012 and beyond. So these platforms, as I write in the book, are colliding, and one of my favorite quotes in the book is from Bugs Bunny quoting Groucho Marx. Of course, you realize this means war.
And it will, and that's going to be interesting. So let's talk about the forthcoming collisions, because they are not small collisions. When you start talking about the movie industry, which is dominant down here in Southern California, the area that you're broadcasting into, that is a huge part of our economy here in this area. And when you see the studios competing to be on Apple's platform with the iTunes Store and in Amazon with Kindle and so forth, there's going to be some messy bloodletting going on. How do you see this playing out over the next 2 or 3 years when these giants collide?
Well, I think there will be a lot of casualties, and I know that Fast Company recently ran, Bill, a big story about 3 months ago on who will win the great tech war of 2012, and I really don't think there will be one winner. I don't see Google displacing Facebook in terms of social technologies or social networking, and I don't think that Google will sell more books than Amazon, but I think we will see casualties. There will be blood, and I can see Netflix getting acquired, if not by one of the gang of four, then by maybe a company like Verizon, because it really isn't a platform. You can't build things on top of Netflix. Netflix is contingent upon the platforms of other companies. So if you're Google and you're trying to ramp up your content, well, why not make that acquisition? Google certainly has the cash. You know, Apple has $100 billion in cash. It has more than the federal government. So I think that there will be some bloodshed, and some companies will decide that they just can't compete with these dominant platforms, and they'll probably get out of what they're doing or try to merge or make an acquisition. And again, a company like Yahoo, a company like AOL, you know, we've seen companies like MySpace sort of wane in importance over the years. That's certainly going to continue.
All right. My guest is Phil Simon, author of the book, The Age of the Platform, How Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google Have Redefined Business. And Phil, I want to dive into this next question because this is intriguing to me. Facebook is different than the other three members of the Gang of Four. Amazon has Kindle and Kindle Fire, which you alluded to earlier. Apple has a lot of hardware. They've got the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod, and, of course, all of their personal computers as well. Google has the Android operating system, and who knows what's going to come out of the acquisition that Google made of Motorola Mobility. Perhaps there will be some hardware that comes out of that. The difference is this. Facebook doesn't have a device or an OS with which to operate on. So in what ways does this threaten Facebook's long-term competitiveness, do you think?
I'm not sure that it does, Bill, and I would argue that Facebook may very well actually get into the hardware business. Now, I don't have any inside information, but 5 years ago, Amazon didn't have any hardware. It recently launched Kindle and the Kindle Fire. So when Facebook goes public, some people who know much more about it than I do have said that the chief reason, aside from the fact that under SEC rules they will have to go public because there are more than 500 private stakeholders in the company, Facebook will have the funds to potentially make an acquisition. And when Google went out and bought Motorola for $12.5 billion, they had that money. They're obviously making a great deal of cash. They have that kind of capital. Facebook has really been limited. If you take a look at its history, it's done about 8 or 9 mergers or acquisitions a year over the last 2 or 3 years, but it really hasn't had the kind of funds available that the other three in the Gang of Four do. So once it goes public, I think all bets are off. Facebook will have to do more in terms of reporting, but it will have more cash available to it. So I'm not sure that Facebook is inherently disadvantaged. In a year, we may be talking about the Facebook phone or the Facebook tablet.
Well, that will be very interesting, Phil. But let me challenge you a little bit on that a step farther, if we can, because Apple, of the four, seems to be the only one that's making money with the hardware that they do. They're the ones that are maintaining the margins. If you look at Amazon, if you look at the Kindle and the Kindle Fire, they are truly loss leaders. They're selling these things at a loss. It costs them more to manufacture those devices than they actually make in the sales. They figure they're going to make it up through the sale of movies, through the sale of books, and the other and sundry things that they sell. Google, with the Motorola Mobility, it remains to be seen if they can make a profit at it. But, hey, Motorola wasn't making a profit on their phones. What makes us think that Google is there? In what ways is that challenge the other three or the other two that are in the hardware business but really don't know the hardware business? Their expertise is in platforms, and now they're into something that is completely foreign to them.
Yeah, it's a great point, Bill, and I argue in the book that if you're just trying to do search, like Google has historically done and made most of its money from, that is inherently dangerous. Look at Microsoft 10 years ago. It was virtually a monopoly with regard to productivity applications, with regard to operating systems. Right, Windows and Office were at 90%+ market share. Well, now, and I saw the statistic a couple of weeks ago, something like only 40% of all devices that connect to the Internet connect via Windows. Well, why? Because you have Android, because you have cell phones and smartphones and tablets and all of these non-Microsoft devices. So I certainly respect any difference of opinion, but if you think that the world will be the same place in 5 years and Google will still make billions and billions from traditional index search, you may be wrong. These companies understand. A great book by Clayton Christensen called The Innovator's Dilemma, and Steve Jobs pointed this out in the Isaacson book. The question is not will your business be cannibalized? The question is who's going to do it. So I applaud these companies for taking some leaps, and in some cases they failed. Certainly when Jeff Bezos started Amazon in 1994, he didn't necessarily think that he would be selling hardware or that his company would make this year upwards of $1 billion from selling excess cloud computing power. So I applaud these companies for taking these risks, even though, to your point, they don't necessarily have the traditional expertise. I would argue that the age of the platform depends upon taking these kinds of intelligent risks and embracing uncertainty. Those people who have a 5 or 10 year plan, I think, are foolish. I mean, a year ago, who would have thought that we would have seen the fall of, what, four regimes in the Middle East?
Right. Exactly. The Arab Spring, unprecedented. My guest is Phil Simon, author of the book The Age of the Platform. Phil, then to help clarify this point a little bit for us, do a little compare and contrast for me, will you? At the turn of the 21st century, AOL was the dominant platform. In fact, Time Warner shelled out big bucks to buy them out. Now, it started from a dominant position and with so much financial backing. So how did AOL slip and fail to become an enduring platform like Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google?
Well, I think a lot of things happened. I think that, to some extent, AOL, Bill, was a victim of its own success. It made most of its money by sending out those disks and getting people to sign up for dial-up. But it really tried to keep people sort of within the AOL garden at a time when people were trying to get out and be open. So I didn't need to launch the AOL application to go to the net. I could, but when we saw the growth of browsers, I just think that merger with Time Warner really made it difficult. I mean, like, you're talking about merging the old and the new, and one of the things that I point out in the book is that if you take a look at Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, with the exception of Steve Jobs, who recently passed away, you have these companies being led by iconic visionary leaders. And if Mark Zuckerberg wanted to cash out for $1 billion, he could have done that in 2006 or 2007. You know, David Kirkpatrick has a great book called The Facebook Effect that goes into a lot more detail than the movie The Social Network ever did. So I would argue that there were other factors, but when you're talking about merging two totally disparate cultures, and, you know, when Rupert Murdoch took over MySpace or bought it, did anyone think that MySpace would all of a sudden rise from the ashes? And nothing against Rupert Murdoch, but he's not really a tech visionary like a Larry Page or Steve Jobs or Jeff Bezos. So there is something to be said for having just a leader who just lives and breathes the company at the top of it. That's why, for example, I don't have a problem with Mark Zuckerberg owning 57% of Facebook shares once it goes public. He seems to be doing some of the right things so far to get up to 845 million users.
Phenomenal. My guest is Phil Simon, author of the book, The Age of the Platform. So, Phil, let's talk about this. Why is today's platform the new business model? And again, historically, let's do some compare and contrast, because we've seen business models come and go. In the early days of the web, it was eyeballs. Then it was clicks. What makes platforms more enduring and more important than these earlier business models of eyeballs and clicks?
Sure. Well, I think it's important, Bill, to note, and I do this in Chapter 2 of the book, that we've had platforms for a while. Certainly IBM, Microsoft, even if you go back to, say, Ma Bell with telephones. The difference today is the democratization of the technology and the consumerization of IT, and those are some big words, so let me explain them. So I can launch an app very quickly. I can develop different games. We just saw today that on Facebook now you can play Angry Birds. So the speed with which these things come out is just unprecedented, and the tools are available to sort of everyday prosumers. I don't have to be a proper development firm to launch an app or to launch a game. And because of that, the innovation is really coming from external sources, right? We're seeing crowdsourcing. Steve Jobs was a bright guy, but there's no way that he said, once I create the iPad or the iPhone, someone will create this game called Angry Birds, and as a result, it'll be downloaded 40 or 50 million times, right?
Right.
And because you throw a lot of things out there, some of them are going to fail, but some of them are going to hit. And the cost of failure these days, I would argue, is relatively small. If you put your book on Amazon and it doesn't sell, well, that doesn't cost Amazon anything. Whereas if I had stocked the book in a Barnes & Noble and it didn't sell, well, you have inventory costs, right? You have the actual ordering. So it is this virtual world, but I do believe that the platform is a business model with some legs. That's one of the reasons that you hear it, you know, every 5 minutes if you watch the business news.
My guest has been Phil Simon, author of the book, The Age of the Platform, How Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google Have Redefined Business. Phil, if you have piqued the interest of some of my listeners out there, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Sure. The simplest way to find the book, Bill, is theageoftheplatform.com, and my home website is philsimonsystems.com. But you can just Google Phil Simon, and I should show up at the top.
There you go. Phil, it has been a delight. The time passed far too quickly. Thank you for being my guest here on The Business of Life. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Bill. I'd love to do it again.
Thank you. And